This is the Baltimore Annapolis Psychotherapy Podcast. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's Laura Reagan, LCSWC, with today's episode.
Hi, welcome to today's podcast. I'm very excited today to have a guest with me. Kathy Canfield, LCSW, has agreed to be interviewed. So, Kathy, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Laura. I'm really excited about this.
Me too. Kathy is the director of Counseling of Alexandria. You being sort of right down the road, we haven't had a chance to meet in person yet, but we've gotten to know each other a little bit through social media, and I'm really excited about all the things you do in your practice. So, can you just tell us all first a little bit more about yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Laura. I've been in practice a little over 3 years on my own in Alexandria now. Been working in the field a little bit more than 10 years at this point. So I've just always been really passionate about, went into this first to work with kids and love that kids can be more fully in the moment and that they can also do a lot of work and therapy just through movement, through play, and through art. And as I've gotten more excited about that, and then, you know, just looking at the research on trauma and the research on doing more mind-body practices, I've moved into a few other things that we'll talk about some more, but like EMDR and Reiki, and I also have an art therapist as part of my practice now.
Wonderful. And so you are a licensed clinical social worker in Virginia. Mm-hmm. So do you want to talk a little bit about your background with your education?
Sure. I'm from the Midwest, so I have a bachelor's in sociology and then my master's is in social work from the University of Southern Indiana. And I was out there for a while and did a few definitely education-wise, continued right after my master's program, worked in psychiatric hospitals, and worked in some home-based, more traditional social work type of positions, and always have done work in just mental health and a lot with families and children.
Wonderful. I'm excited to hear that you're a sociology undergrad. That was my undergrad, too.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I loved it. Okay, so we had an interview before on my blog where I asked you about how you used EMDR in your practice and what that blog series is about, how people integrate mind, body, spirit, holistic practices into their traditional therapy work or practices in general that can be a part of therapy. So I realized that you are now offering Reiki too, and I love that you do art therapy. I know you say you do play therapy, EMDR, and so we both have a similar population of clients that we work with, working with people who've experienced trauma. So can you just talk more about how do you do those things in your practice, and you can kind of start wherever you want to.
Sure. I'll start with just first meeting with a client or with a parent. I just don't think that a cookie cutter approach works for everyone. So I like to think of these different tools as part of my toolkit. And so after meeting for the first time, then I kind of get a little feel of, okay, this might be a good person to use some EMDR therapy with, or, you know, maybe we need to start with play therapy. I often do that with kids. We'll start with play therapy to build our relationship. And then I might use some EMDR with them and then we'll stay in a play therapy relationship. Adults often come in and say, you know, I want you to use EMDR with me, and that's how I heard about you, and very specifically want to do that. The interesting thing with looking at trauma is that trauma doesn't mean that you saw, you know, something really terrible happen or that something really bad happened to you. It could be, I always go to this example because I think it's universal, something really embarrassing in middle school, you know, a teacher called you out or you were a klutz in gym class or, you know, you just wore the wrong outfit that you thought was really cool and everyone made fun of you that day. That we all have things like that. So when I start to hear, especially adults, talking about, you know, how certain things or events or kind of touch points in life continue to impact them today, that sets up like a really good scenario for using some EMDR work to maybe go to that event where you felt really embarrassed in front of the school and now you can't make speeches in public without getting really nervous because of what happened in seventh grade. And so I try to think of it as, I know I have these tools. Sometimes I use a couple of tools with a client. Sometimes we might primarily use just one. It just, you know, kind of depends. Some people are very open to, you do some mindfulness and some meditation and practice. Some people will do that in a session with me or experiment with it on their own. And it might not be for others. So it's just seeing what feels good, but that the body, I really work to integrate somewhere with our body, because our bodies have memories as well as our minds and our feelings. And I've just seen great results since starting to integrate parts of our body in my work.
That's so cool. And what you said about how, you know, there may be experiences that were extremely shaming or something that you can't move past, even though you don't feel it affects you. It's something that, you know, connects to something that seems to be holding you back.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think it's such a challenge to help people understand that, you know, when I say I work with people who've experienced trauma, and, you know, I've talked to a lot of people who say, oh, well, I haven't experienced any trauma. And then if I do a trauma assessment, they'll have multiple experiences that qualify as being traumatic events, but they don't identify it that way. So I think, you know, when you think about the humiliation of being, you know, dressed wrong or having, right, you know, something really embarrassing happen in middle school and how you kind of take that in as, you know, I just didn't fit. I was an outcast. Everyone was making fun of me. And, you know, that can really affect someone's confidence throughout their life.
For sure.
So I love that you said that and see that as traumatic experiences. It's like if it affects the person as trauma, then it's trauma.
Yeah. I would go so far to say is that it's universal. Like we all have something. So if you say like we universally have something traumatic and thinking of like just being embarrassed in middle school or high school, it's essentially a social death. You know, it's all.
Yeah.
It is traumatic. You could become an outcast and it's just looking at it through the lens of, you know, we don't need to be ashamed that these things have happened and try to bury them, but that we can look at them, look at the roots of what's going on. And EMDR is a great therapy because it's what's happening today. How is that being driven by what's maybe happened in the past? And then how is that past going to impact your future? You know, if we can go back and essentially rework a past event to mean something different, then that can impact the rest of your life in a positive way. And it can also just think about, I think sometimes about generations that.
So true.
Yeah, that we don't pass our pain down to our children and then they don't pass that down to theirs.
So true.
Amazing. Yeah.
Having worked with a lot of families, I've seen the ways that, you know, prior generations' experience of oppression and traumatization, victimization can, you know, influence the way they interact with their children, the way they interpret their children's behavior. And of course, how a parent interprets their child's behavior affects the child, because if, you know, the child is doing something that's normal for a child, but it's something that the parent feels is being disrespectful, you know, the child can feel shamed it's just really a cycle. So thanks for mentioning that. That's such a good point.
Yeah, sure. Yes, it's been an interesting journey for myself that I, with EMDR, I was very fortunate that I just was always very curious about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really get it past that. But it just sounded fun. It sounded cool. And I was just always just someone that didn't see myself just sitting in a chair.
Yeah.
I don't think my body's built for that. So I love that I can help people use the movement and, process things out through both our mind, our emotions, and our bodies. I've seen some really great things happening. And also, of course, with play therapy that, I've had kids that maybe their parents are separated and going through a divorce, and they play a scene out through two dollhouses.
Mm.
And they don't say a word. And that's the other thing with EMDR that's great, too, is we don't have to describe anything in detail. Like, we can just work on wherever someone feels comfortable. And that because we're integrating things through our brains and our bodies and our feelings, the work happens. The work happens internally.
The Institute for Creative Mindfulness is the EMDR therapy training brainchild of Dr. Jamie Marriage, a clinician and author who's on a mission to confront stigma around mental health, trauma, and dissociation. The Institute, informed by Jamie's work, teaches a somatic, expressive, bottom-up approach to EMDR therapy that does not treat dissociation like a dirty word. ICM empowers their students to navigate dissociation as a normal response to trauma and stress when it shows up. Dr. Jamie Marriage is out and proud on various levels about her own recovery and is a strong believer in the healing capacities of EMDR therapy and helping our clients to heal from the impact of trauma. I and two of my team members have been trained by the Institute for Creative Mindfulness directly with Jamie, and I was impressed with how dissociation really was treated as just a normal aspect of trauma therapy work, which it is. Both Jamie and the consultants were matter of fact about if and when dissociation arises, it's okay, it's normal, and here's how you can help the client in that situation. The Institute for Creative Mindfulness is offering a coupon code to save 15% off any program offered by ICM. This includes their EMDR therapy basic training programs and a wide variety of their home study, advanced topics, and other CE offerings. Go to instituteforcreativemindfulness.com and use promo code 15OFF for listeners. There's a link in the show notes. You can copy the promo code and use the link right there in the show notes to make it easy.
We all know that small actions can make a big difference in our lives. I know for me, I can be in a terrible mood, go out somewhere and see a stranger, make eye contact and just smile at them and find suddenly I feel good. Whether it's practicing mindfulness a few minutes each day, movement practices, small actions can have big benefits, like how taking care of your gut can support whole body health. Seeds DSO1 Daily Symbiotic benefits your gut, skin, and heart health in just two little capsules a day. Your body is an ecosystem, and great health starts in the gut. Your gut is a central hub for various pathways through the body, and a healthy gut microbiome means benefits for digestion, skin health, heart health, our immune systems, and more. Trust your gut with Seeds DSO1 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/living and use code 25LIVING to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seeds DSO1 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/living, code 25LIVING.
Therapists, we've all had that moment. You wake up in the middle of the night. Oh my gosh, did I do my notes? Well, you don't have to worry about that anymore when you use Therapy Notes. Therapy Notes makes it easy to write your notes, get them done quickly, but thoroughly. My group practice has used Therapy Notes for 6 years, and everyone always finds it easy to use. But the best thing is, if you do need help, you can call their customer service number and a person answers the phone. And anytime I've ever had to use it, which is maybe 3 times in the past 6 years, my issue has been resolved easily with a cheerful demeanor in 15 minutes or less. So I highly recommend Therapy Notes. And don't forget, go to therapynotes.com and use promo code CHAT to get 2 free months.
That's so great that you mentioned not having to describe things in detail, because I think a lot of people are uncomfortable getting therapy for trauma because they think, I don't want to have to talk about what I went through. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can certainly understand why someone would feel that way. But so EMDR can be a nonverbal work. Is that correct?
Yes. And we can also just stay in the present. You know, I will ask people, all right, what kind of feelings do you have right now? Maybe they say sadness, maybe they say anger, and they'll say, can you locate that feeling in your body anywhere? You know, my chest feels tight, or my palms are getting hot. We can work with the present, just those feelings, those sensations that are happening right now. And I kind of think of it in a way of metabolism. We can metabolize out some of that stuff for relief. And that's without talking about anything in the past, like just right now, what does it feel like?
That's such a great analogy, the metabolism, because you're literally, trauma is something unresolved in your body. It's like there's something in you that needs to pass through, but it's not going.
Exactly. Yeah. It's tough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've never heard that analogy before. I love that.
Yeah. It's just the more work that I do that's, And I've done my own EMDR therapy. I'm always happy to volunteer that to anyone I work with. That because a good example for me was anytime I noticed attention was on me, or that if I was doing public speaking, my ears would turn hot, red, red and burning. And I did some EMDR reprocessing during our training, after doing that, you know, I found something in my past, I can't remember what it was now, that was something from school that brought that on, where I felt embarrassed. So it was like my ears remembered that. And, you know, there was nothing I was doing to make that happen consciously.
Yeah.
So my ears would always be red hot. So we did some reprocessing during our training. My ears were hot the rest of that night until I went to bed. And then it was gone the next day, and that does not happen to me anymore. When I notice attention on me, or when I speak in public, they don't pop up.
Do you feel different too when you, other than your ears, when you're doing public speaking?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we just have that flight or fight response.
Mm-hmm.
That a lot of people have this with public speaking, that your body starts to take over, and it does not matter how, you know, logically prepared you feel or confident you feel. If your body has gotten some kind of sign of it's time to run, but then you don't run, so then you're like forcing your body into this situation where your survival instinct is saying, get out of there right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anything logically you can just do to stop that.
Right. You can't just tell your body to not have its parasympathetic response.
Yeah. You can't say it's fine. You practice. So that's also a really great point in our therapy, is that everyone I see, especially adults, like they've already logicked their way into trying to figure it out way before they come to see us, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I shouldn't be so worried about that, or that happened a long time ago. What's wrong? You know, and then it becomes something more shaming because I haven't been able to figure this out in my head yet.
Yeah. And our heads can really, really analyze and really, really come up with a lot of explanations. But if you don't get it in your body and in your heart, you know, and I guess in your soul, really, it's not going to feel better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I'm hearing myself say often right now, you know, that when I am with a client saying that your brain is trying to apply logic to a situation that this has no logic. This is not based in logic.
Exactly. It's those different parts of your brain. The primitive part is having the reaction, and the logical part's going, don't worry about it. It's okay. No big deal. Mm-hmm. And the primitive part's like, get out of here quick.
Yeah,
I know. I know. I've certainly had my own anxiety about public speaking, and I do it fairly often, but when I do it, I'm nervous and I calm myself, but my body still has the response, you know, so I'll be like sweating or I'll be like shaking afterwards, you know, and I'm like, whoo, all the adrenaline's just running through my body.
Exactly.
So you can't, you know, you can, our brains are very amazing in what they can try to do to protect us, but you know, your body is also trying to protect you in a different way. So can you talk about how movement happens in EMDR? Is it the therapist moving, the client moving, both?
Well, sometimes the therapist, but it's usually the client. So the very first way they used EMDR was just having a client move their eyes left and right.
Mm-hmm.
And then they discovered it was about bilateral stimulation. So that just means some kind of stimulus left and then right that registers left brain, right brain.
Okay.
So before we had any of our technology around it, you would essentially just tap on your client's legs, left, right, left, right.
Okay.
Like on their knees. So I've done that a few times when I've had some like equipment fail issues in the middle of a session, unfortunately, but usually it's the client. I've had some really great things where people were processing and their body would feel something. I had someone saying, like, I just feel stuck. I feel like I just need to get moving. And we were in the office for a later session and I said, no one else is here. Let's walk up and down the hallway while you do this. Because she felt very inclined to move.
Yeah.
So we did. I've had people, you know, who weren't able to defend themselves in something. Maybe it was a fight and they weren't able to put their hands up to, you know, guard themselves, that while they're reprocessing, will act that out.
Mm.
Will put their arms up to defend themselves. Those are a couple of examples that come to mind. So I try to really listen in to what their body is telling them to do.
Yeah. That's interesting. I heard Peter Levine from Somatic Experiencing talking about his work, and it was a similar thing that he said, that you know, the body would move through the movement that it needed to do when it first was happening, but they couldn't for whatever reason.
Yeah, based on that idea.
Uh-huh. I knew because of the name eye movement desensitization reprocessing that your eyes were moving, but I thought that was what it was. So I never really understood how that is, but you're saying that the kind of bilateral stimulation, so tapping on and off one side and the other, are the eyes still moving too?
No, you could do that, but not necessarily.
Okay.
So it's, I've read Francine Shapiro developed this, and it was first discovered as an eye movement, and that she says years later now that it's such a popular name that she won't be changing it, but that if she could change it, she would leave out the EM wouldn't be there, the eye movement wouldn't be there.
It's
more of like a reprocessing therapy.
Oh, well, that makes sense. You have a name. You got to stick with it.
Yeah, exactly. there are ways we can do it with audio also.
Hmm.
And the way we go in is just, it's like doing a sound check. It's what feels good for your body. Is your body like or dislike checking in this way or that way? And it just, we custom that to what feels okay for everyone, and everyone has a different preference.
That's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that makes me want to ask you about the other thing that really caught my attention, which is Reiki.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about that. So I'm very newly trained in Reiki, and I did a level one in January. So Reiki has three levels of training.
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, and then master training.
Okay.
So I was encouraged, and you're called a Reiki master if you're a teacher, by a Reiki master to just use Reiki on myself for 28 days only. So it's this idea that there's a universal positive energy that we can connect to and then use it for good.
Okay.
So it's a pretty simple idea. So you can also use it for yourself. So I've integrated that into my, I guess, my own daily personal practice, something I try to make sure I do every day. And I haven't gotten too much into really direct Reiki with clients yet. I definitely use it between sessions for myself.
Oh, okay.
My own self-care.
Yes.
It's something also that I definitely connect with it when I have someone, maybe someone is playing quietly, and just think about sending positive energy to them essentially while they're playing, or maybe while someone is, there are times during EMDR sessions that someone is quiet. So just kind of sending a positive intention to them at that time also.
Hmm.
You know, I'm still just kind of integrating it and playing around with how it could be used. I interviewed a therapist actually in DC that she does very directly use Reiki in her psychotherapy practice.
The Institute for Creative Mindfulness is the EMDR therapy training brainchild of Dr. Jamie Marriage, a clinician and author who's on a mission to confront stigma around mental health, trauma, and dissociation. The Institute, informed by Jamie's work, teaches a somatic, expressive, bottom-up approach to EMDR therapy that does not treat dissociation like a dirty word. ICM empowers their students to navigate dissociation as a normal response to trauma and stress when it shows up. Dr. Jamie Marriage is out and proud on various levels about her own recovery and is a strong believer in the healing capacities of EMDR therapy and helping our clients to heal from the impact of trauma. I and two of my team members have been trained by the Institute for Creative Mindfulness directly with Jamie, and I was impressed with how dissociation really was treated as just a normal aspect of trauma therapy work, which it is. Both Jamie and the consultants were matter of fact about if and when dissociation arises, it's okay, it's normal, and here's how you can help the client in that situation. The Institute for Creative Mindfulness is offering a coupon code to save 15% off any program offered by ICM. This includes their EMDR therapy basic training programs and a wide variety of their home study, advanced topics, and other CE offerings. Go to instituteforcreativemindfulness.com and use promo code 15OFF for listeners. There's a link in the show notes. You can copy the promo code and use the link right there in the show notes to make it easy. The Institute for Creative Mindfulness is the EMDR therapy training brainchild of Dr. Jamie Marriage, a clinician and author who's on a mission to confront stigma around mental health, trauma, and dissociation. The Institute, informed by Jamie's work, teaches a somatic, expressive, bottom-up approach to EMDR therapy that does not treat dissociation like a dirty word. ICM empowers their students to navigate dissociation as a normal response to trauma and stress when it shows up. Dr. Jamie Marriage is out and proud on various levels about her own recovery and is a strong believer in the healing capacities of EMDR therapy and helping our clients to heal from the impact of trauma. I and two of my team members have been trained by the Institute for Creative Mindfulness directly with Jamie, and I was impressed with how dissociation really was treated as just a normal aspect of trauma therapy work, which it is. Both Jamie and the consultants were matter of fact about if and when dissociation arises, it's okay, it's normal, and here's how you can help the client in that situation. The Institute for Creative Mindfulness is offering a coupon code to save 15% off any program offered by ICM. This includes their EMDR therapy basic training programs and a wide variety of their home study, advanced topics, and other CE offerings. Go to instituteforcreativemindfulness.com and use promo code 15OFF for listeners. There's a link in the show notes. You can copy the promo code and use the link right there in the show notes to make it easy.
I haven't really heard of people doing that too much, but doesn't mean that they aren't. I mean, obviously she is.
Right.
I think
she does kind of like a mini Reiki session at the beginning. And then they do more of like a traditional psychotherapy at the end of the time.
Mm-hmm. So, and what is a, I've heard of Reiki as being called healing hands, or I don't know really how it's done. Is it touching, or do you, when you send the positive intention, are you near them, or are you just across the room and you're just channeling positive energy?
Yeah, you can do it a number of ways. So there's the idea that you can send the energy just by looking at someone.
Okay.
And then also could be touching. So, or it could even be just being very close. The hands, in our training, we just kept our hands about maybe like 2 inches or so above the area that we were working on.
That was the impression that I had, that it was like your hands are right over. And I was always thinking, well, how does it work if you're not touching? Like, mm-hmm. but, you know, when you talk about the energy, I guess that's how.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can feel free to elaborate if you can explain it more, but I don't know.
You know, the Reiki training was one of the few things. I'm usually a big planner and will even map out a calendar of, I'm going to do this training, I'm going to explore this. and I heard about it, and I was like, I think I'm going to do that.
Wow.
I did it. So it was a very intuitively driven thing that I did. And I really connected with the Reiki master that I had. And it just, I don't know, it just seemed like it was something that was just the right time.
But I love that.
Yeah, and there's a little voice of me that's been a skeptic of this too, that, you know, but I've said, even if it's just a very mindful moment of thinking of sending, you know, positive thoughts to someone else or myself, that's enough. But in training, I've literally felt, physiologically felt energy and shifts in energy. So I think it's something. I think the human spirit, soul, energy field, whatever you call it, there's something we have there.
Yeah,
and Reiki's a way of like dialing into that and being able to use it in a powerful way.
That's awesome. And I think a year ago, I probably would have been very skeptical of that when you said it. I would be like, "Oh, that's nice, Kathy." But I have, you know, begun to be more open to those things, those types of things myself. Just hearing so many people talking about energy work and intuition. And, you know, I think what I've realized as I begin to, and that's what made me decide to do that blog series, as I begin to look into these things more, I'm very interested. So obviously I'm ready now to understand those things. And what I've noticed is the effects of the methods I've tried are very real. So I haven't done Reiki yet, but I definitely will try it. And I didn't even know that someone could use it on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, it's excellent. I mean, it helps me just very basic. I just feel like it's much easier transition into falling asleep at night when I use some at bedtime.
Wow. So I am really fascinated by that. And I love that you said you use it for your own self-care too, because as trauma therapists, we bear witness to our clients' stories, and then, you know, you have a few minutes in between sessions, maybe 15 minutes, 30 minutes, and then you hear your next client's story, and to be present with them. I've been wondering now for years, what is the best way to be present with a client while they tell you their story, or even, you know, you're with them in their pain, mm-hmm. but then not to take it on to where it becomes your pain. And, you know, I believe that self-care and I think that's really, that question has been the one that drove me to explore other ways besides just, you know, getting your own talk therapy or, you know, getting massages frequently. But I want to know about like real self-care. What's a self-care practice look like? And like you said, with doing Reiki every day and doing it in between sessions, that's an intentional self-care practice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. And I mix up what I do between sessions. It's really, but I feel like it's just years for me to come to where I am with my self-care. I think it's a huge challenge for us as mm-hmm. practitioners. We're drawn into this to help other people, and we're usually not going into it thinking about how tough it's going to be for us. I didn't, at least.
No. And we, you know, I think idealistically, when you start doing this work, you think, I'm going to make a difference. I'm going to save everyone. And of course, we know that you can't save anyone. You're going through a journey together with someone. But, you know, if you're trying to save them, you're going to feel completely overwhelmed at some point.
Mm-hmm. I've read recently, I wish I could remember where from, but that this idea is really sticking with me in the last several months is we cannot move our client beyond our own
where we are.
And I feel like with as parents too, that's similar with our children. We can't move them to a better place than we are right now. So it's like taking my own medicine. I talk to people about being active, having fun just for the sake of it, you know, connecting with nature and slowing down, being present. So if I have just 15 minutes, but I'm in this great office where I have a sand tray and I have a meditation bell and plenty of play items, but I've got a huge toolbox for myself. So sometimes I make a sand tray of whatever's going on for me.
Oh, I love that.
Sometimes I listen to some music. It might be, I don't know, it might be fun music, but it might also be just some kind of meditative music. I color mandalas sometimes.
I love mandalas too. I'm a huge fan of mandalas. But we have to walk the walk, like you just said. I mean, we tell our clients all the things that they should do to help nurture themselves. And if we don't do the same things, it's hypocrisy for one.
Put that out there.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, you can't help someone move past where you are. I was listening to something, an audio recording of Brené Brown yesterday, and she said something about that for parenting, that she said, you know, I want my children to be wholehearted, but they're only going to be as wholehearted as I'm able to be. So
yeah.
I have to work on it every day so that I can help them work on it. And it's just the same with self-care. I mean, it all fits together. That's what I'm to realize. So Kathy, will you talk a little bit more about your practice offers overall in terms of what your associates can do and things like that that are different from the areas that you do?
Sure. My overall vision for a Counseling of Alexandria is to make sure that we are not I don't have a slogan for it, but we are not this come sit down and chat about your problems practice. We are an integrative, everybody that is at the practice is using some kind of mind-body integrative approach. So I want to just stay under that umbrella for my practice.
Yeah.
So recently brought on an art therapist. Her name is Jackie. She is amazing. She has a huge background in doing art therapy and is really passionate about working with kids and art therapy. And it's a really nice place for adults, too. I think that if I said to an adult, do you want to do play therapy? That will be a lot more resistance than art therapy, which, that can be tricky too. So she gets it. My other associate, Aina, she does a lot of mindfulness training.
Mm-hmm.
She's also going to be doing EMDR training this summer. And she does some more work as far as, even just the movement, the simple movement of writing something down. We don't think about it that way, but that is an integrative. That's something outside of our brain. That's getting our body moving. So she does some work in journal therapy also.
Oh.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. In like mandalas, just, people, if you sit and chat with me while you color a mandala, you will talk about something different. It will open up a whole new avenue than if we didn't do anything. If we just sat there and talked. I've seen it a lot. So
I've seen that too. I agree with you 100%.
Uh-huh.
Someone can be feeling not very connected to what they're emotions are about the issue they're discussing, and then they start doing a mandala and they go way deeper, and they may start, you know, expressing emotion, like, for example, crying, where they before were just, you know, very monotone. Mm-hmm. It moves something. All of these things.
Right. And we're, as adults especially, kids get this too, though, but especially as adults, we have spent years, all of us have, crafting really great fences.
Yes.
And compartmentalization, which, you know what, that has gotten us to where we are. And we can't always be completely aware of what's going on for us and all of our pain. We wouldn't be able to go to work. So I feel like anything movement-based takes away and helps pull back the defenses and pull back the wall to really getting where we need to go for healing. I mean, that's what this is all about, is, you know, helping people find ways of healing.
Yes. I love that. I'm fascinated with everything you had to say, and I really appreciate so much how you explained things. I'm really glad you agreed to come and be on the podcast, too.
Yeah, this has been great. Thank you so much, Laura.
Thank you. So tell us your website, and I'll put it in the notes, too.
Oh, excellent. So it's pretty easy. It's counselingofalexandria.com.
Thank you so much again for being here.
Thank you for listening to the Baltimore Annapolis Psychotherapy Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. For more, visit Laura's website, www.laurareaganlcswc.com.